20 years experience in sales. Welcome to my podcast, Saroj Bains. She will tell us so many things when it comes to selling. She masters the sales for the past 20 years. She opened her training company a year and a half ago, and now she will teach us and give us some tips when it comes to selling. So maybe if you are struggling with selling because you don't want to be pushy or anything like that, there is a totally different approach which Saroj will share with us in today's interview. So listen carefully. Hi, Saroj. Thank you very much for joining my podcast today. And let's just jump right into it. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself? What is it you do? Where are you based? Maybe a little bit more about your background and why have you decided to go to this business or speaking journey?
Certainly. First of all, thank you, Vincent, for inviting me to the podcast. And a little bit about myself. I've been in the tech industry for over 20 years. And I've been professional selling for over 15 years. So I used to sell software, services, a bit of hardware in my earlier days. And about a year and a half ago, I decided to exit a corporate sales career and now to set up my own sales training, advisory, mentoring for SMEs that focus on tech. And the reason I exited that was because sometimes you need to make choices in life. And if I don't do this now, then I probably would not do it later on either. So I've kind of like gone, you know, let's get off the hamster wheel and do something. I'd say a bit different, but in reality, it's not. I'm actually teaching what I've been doing for years. So how I've honed in my skills, and I'm focusing on the SME sector because the large corporates have got big budgets for big training programs to put all their staff on, and SMEs don't. And they don't have access to senior professionals that have done what I've done over the years and honed in on my skills. So my, my focus now is to support these SMEs and get them in professional selling in whatever it is that they are selling.
Okay, absolutely. Amazing. Thank you very much for sharing. One of the things what you mentioned is very true. Like you said, like there are big companies, they have the budget, they can hire the big companies and trainers and they can do all of that. But when there is a smaller company, right? And they don't necessarily have the budget to hire, like you mentioned, someone senior salesperson. So, and if they don't have those skills, so they might be struggling. So this is where you kind of come in, right? So you are that kind of the person, so you can help those smaller companies to grow with the selling.
Certainly, yes. Because often what I find is some of these companies don't even have a strategy. So when we think about selling, they don't have a strategy, but also the word selling. A lot of people fear selling. When they think of sales, they go, oh my God, I don't want to talk to people and sell. But the reality is professional selling is about selling your product. It's about solving a problem. When I have conversations with prospects in my previous roles, it wasn't, oh, I've got a product here. Let me go and sell what it is that I've got to offer, whether it's the dashboards or whether it's reporting or whether it's highways software. It was about sitting with them and understanding why is it that they want to do what it is that they want to do. I work out what nuggets fit in and what software needs to go in, not them. Because we need to solve the problems and shifting that mindset of SMEs who are mainly from tech backgrounds, it is about, I've got a product, and people do get engrossed in the product and there's nothing wrong with that. If they need to step back a little bit and go, what is that problem I need to solve? And can I solve it or can I not? And also walking away from opportunities that are not right for them. So focusing on SMEs is really about what's the strategy that you're going with? Because one of the main things I tend to hear is, oh, our market is everybody and anybody because our product fits everybody and anybody. And you're like, that's great. Everybody and anybody is a huge market. So where do you want to focus on? Because you've got to start somewhere. So driving that level and getting them to think about, okay, well, where is it I want to focus my effort and energy on? because I can't go for everything. And one day I'll go to one event and then go to a totally different event and then go somewhere else and then go traveling up and down the city and then go in one platform. It's quite a scattergun approach. So it's driving that focus. So people got a bit of a structure in place. Mm-hmm. So looking at the strategy, and then the sales kind of like falls into it. Once we start talking about the problems, we're talking about what is it that they need? And then you're able to say, well, actually, to do this, it's going to look like this.
Okay, amazing. So when you work with people also from your background in, 20 years in tech, 15 years in selling, is there any like a same kind of similar pattern what these small businesses or the tech businesses are having? Like, is there an issue which you can see it every single time? Like, or maybe not every single time, but you'll come and they're like, this is the problem we have. We cannot make the sales happen. And you come and you clearly see the pattern. It's the same pattern with a lot of other companies. And if it's their pattern like that or more, what there would be? You mentioned one, which is they are focusing on all market. Is there anything else?
Yeah. So what I noticed, so early on when I used to have a product I sell, because I didn't have my training, it was really early on, I said, oh, I've got a product and we'll sell it. And then I went, hold on, this isn't quite right. And I sold to public sector. I sold to public sector, high-vis infrastructure companies, and we sold in a complex procurement environment. So it's different for SMEs because the procurement is a lot, the people involved are a lot less. But when we're selling to public sector, it's complex and you're not trying to convince one person. You've got a group of, I've sat in front of 20 or more people in a room and we've got to convince all of them. The only way you convince them is by first understanding why are they sitting in the room in the first place? What is it that they want to get out of the meeting? And this is the common area I've always focused on. If there's somebody in a room, we need to understand what everybody else is there in the room for, because the person on the left is sitting in the room for a different reason for the person on the right, potentially. They could be a procurement person, or they could be the finance guy, and they could be the business person. In the SME world, as I've now entered it from my perspective, from the training perspective, there's a lot more less people involved. So the procurement cycle is potentially a lot shorter. But the challenges that I'm finding in the SME space is they're either going for the wrong market or having a scattergun approach, or they're going in with a product sell as opposed to let me find out what it is, the challenge I'm solving. And then the second, so that's the first bit. The commonalities that I've seen and some of the techniques that I've used, which have helped me in my career, and this is what I now bring to the SME space, I go right back. I ask the client, first of all, the industry, what's happening in the industry, what's happening in terms of trends. And if that's already, if they already know that, that's brilliant. But then research your clients, prospective clients. You know, just don't turn up and say, oh, tell me a bit about your company. It's about, okay, this is what's happening in your company because it shows initiative. This is what we're seeing in the market. And then understanding more about the organization. You don't just go, I've got a product, let me show you what I can do. Because a lot of people do that, and I've noticed it. Yeah. Let me show you what I can do. Let me show you the widgets and how nice it looks. But you don't know if that is going to solve the problem that I have. And then I follow a process all the way through to closing opportunities and doing test closes, because the last thing you want to do is put so much effort and energy into some of these prospects and opportunities. Number one, if they were never going to close anyway. And secondly, if you were wrong fit in the first place. So there's lots of elements that do come into play, and it's just working through where each element fits into and what questions do we ask at what stage as well. Because if you go straight in and say, this is what we do and this is a problem we solve, and by the way, do you want, you know, this is a cost, and you know, would you like to buy it, the chances are you're probably gonna lose the opportunity. because you're going in too soon, and it's all about you, you, not about the prospect.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you very much for sharing that. One of the things that I pointed out in here is the word we mentioned, test closing.
Yeah.
It really reminded me, I've done some training with Tony Robbins, and he was explaining that over there a lot. And I really like that concept. I'm doing it as well when it comes to selling. And it's so powerful because you are just finding out where you are in that conversation with those people. And one of the things, what it is hard, it is not easy, I have to say, when you speak with someone, at least sometimes for me, especially when I started with that, it was like assuming the sale. You don't even ask them. It's like assuming the sale is already done. They decided, because they already told us all their pain points, whatever they want to achieve. And if we have that product or service, we can solve it. So there is no reason why we should ask, because they need it. So it's like they're assuming the sale, but it's sometimes difficult. I don't know, how do you find it for yourself, or if you use it, but sometimes it's like, you know, just tell them like, okay, so this is the bank details. This is where you transfer the money. And I didn't say yes. I was like, yeah, but you told me that this is what you are struggling with. This is what you want to get. And this is how we can work together to achieve that. So isn't that what you want to do? Yes, that's it. It is. Okay, so give me your bank details.
And it's true, people. And I work with some companies and it's the same. They assume that it's going to happen. And I always say, do the test. So it's putting loads of work into, say, here's the price. Ask them, is this in your budget range? Is this in line with your expectation? Because you're getting, that's what you're doing. You're getting a feel for whether it's going to move forward, or you're going to get another stumbling block. And remember, a question that comes up across is, it could be an objection, but all they're doing is gaining clarification for something they didn't understand. The amount of times I've had the same question asked in a different way, and I've had to answer it, but then I've had to change the way I answered it because I realized it didn't make sense the first way. The other thing I wanted to highlight, which is really interesting from a sales perspective, is when you're working in an opportunity, you've got people with you, is understanding the type of people that you're talking to. Now, is this person I'm speaking to, do they like to see things? Are they more of a visual person? Or do they like you to write a lot of detail down? And that's how they understand it. Do they like to hear things? So they need you to explain it to them. So what type of learning mechanism do they have? And once you kind of like pick up some of these cues, you'll go, actually, this person is a detailed person. I'm going to expect more questions to come before that door closes. It's happened to me. I've had 20 people in a room. I've had 5 or 6 meetings with different people, but that one same person that's influencing the project, each of the meetings, where we replicated, explained, showed what it was that we were there to show. And then on an email, we got a whole list of questions about the similar stuff that we'd already explained. So the person I was dealing with, it wasn't that they had something there that they just couldn't get. It was just they were a detailed person, so they needed to check every line item. But once I understood it, instead of getting frustrated about it, I embraced it to say, that's absolutely fine. Answer this. Is that enough information to help you in order to fill your paperwork in? Is there anything else that you need from me? And once you understand who you're dealing with and the type of person, embrace them, because there's a lot of different personalities you're going to come across, and you can't treat them all the same. None of my opportunities were the same. So they were the same in terms of the solution, but solved similar problems. However, people, always different. Always. Process, always be ready for something through her spanner in the works. Always understand the process. So from a public sector, there is a defined process if you go through bids. Now, if you're not going through a bid and it's going through a different route, like three quotes or whatever the protocol is, then you write the process out and ask them, is that right? It means a better control of your opportunity. I'm going to come back to your test close and say, have you done it before? Yes. Once I learned, it's interesting. It's going to save me days of my time writing a proposal. I worked it all out. And the first question I'd say is, this is what you asked for. This is the issue. This is how we solve it. And these are the commercials. Does it meet your budget? Is it in line with your budget? Is it in line with your expectation? And if they come back and say, actually, it was it's a little bit higher than what we thought it would be, you say, what did you think it would be?
Mm-hmm.
And if this, and work with the answer that they give you, and then you work out, can you fit something in the budget that they've given you? And then you adjust your proposal and say, I can meet that budget. This is what it looks like. Does that work for you? And if they say, yes, it does, then do all the hard work and paperwork and put it together.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. When you were speaking about these different personalities, it's it seems like, I mean, we listened to the same training. This is like being digital, visual, orientated. And I find it very valuable, and not only when it comes to selling, but also when you are dealing with the client on an ongoing basis. Because I had one client, he's with us, we are managing his service accommodation, and I was telling him, you know, things like what's happening, and now there is a low season, that's why we don't make that much money, but now it's going to come good season, so it'll make more money. But he was still asking me questions, asking, and send me some paperwork, send me some things. I'm like, oh my God. So, and after I sent him like everything what I've got, I'm like, here, the past 2 years, you check for yourself, do your own due diligence. He put all these things together. He made his own spreadsheets using whatever, I don't know. And after he came back to me, I was like, okay, now it makes sense. I'm like, no, this is what I was telling you all the time, but he just wanted to see it because he's a digital oriented person. But I didn't think of that in that moment. So I'm like, oh, huh, I should realize that this sooner.
And it takes time, and I've done the programs that taught me. I went, oh my God, of course. When I sat in a seminar and I listened to one of the trainers, and he was teaching us auditory kinesthetic, visual, and there's another one, and he was teaching us all of this, and I thought, oh yes, that's true. So when I'm going to sit in front of my prospect next time, I'm going to watch what they do, who's asking the questions, who's asking for paperwork, who's asking for detail, and the quiet one. So the other thing to notice as well is there's neurodiverse people in the audience. There's neurodiverse people we meet. There'll be neurodiverse clients. However, nobody sits there and go, I'm neurodiverse, I've got ADHD, or I'm autistic. They don't say that. So for professional sales, we pick up the cues so that we can then help them understand in the best way that they can understand what it is that we're communicating. And it's a little bit harder to pick up. However, for example, if somebody's fidgeting with their phone or something like that, neurotypical people might say, God, that's a bit rude. But we don't know whether they're neurodiverse, and that's their mechanism of coping or mechanism of thinking. They might be fidgeting. Again, it's picking up on these things rather than us making an assumption to say, oh, God, they're a bit rude. Because we do. In my earlier days, we'd go, God, he wasn't looking up, or he wasn't paying attention. You know, he's yawning. What's going on here? But as I've learned my craft over the years, I go, it's okay. And then you just ask that person a question, say, everything that we've gone through, is, do you have any questions? Is there anything that I can clarify while I'm here today? And it's just picking up on some of these cues, because we're all different. We like information in different ways. Like you said, the person that your client, he just wanted to see it. So even though you're telling him it, it's not processing for him in the way that he needs it to process for him. So for him to get the information and then make it sense to him, he's like, I understand that now.
I mean, there's so many things from when it comes to, like we are saying, about selling. Another one I really like, if you want to tell us more about it, is like when someone is like, especially mismatcher, like, do you know, would you like to tell us more about that? Because when I want you to.
When you say mismatcher, explain a little bit more what you mean.
Yeah, so when, basically, it's just a term, but when you say something, they say the opposite.
Okay.
So you say, like, it's like that, and it's like, yeah, I don't think so, it's like that. I think it's like that. And they're always trying to say the opposite of what you are saying.
Yeah. You will get that. it does happen. And that is a person showing their ego. Because if they continually say, well, it's not like this, it's like that, bearing in mind, you're the expert in your field. They're the expert in their field. You're the expert in your field. We did have this years ago at, I've had it in a sales situation where somebody has said, we want your system to be up and running 100% in a SaaS environment. And I'm talking techie now. I'm talking techie.
Yeah.
We want your system to be running all the time, 100%. And you're going, but within that, you need downtime. And within the contracts, every supplier will put a little bit of downtime in there. That doesn't affect your business, but we put it in there so that you can do the updates and whatever you need to do. And this instance, this particular person was saying, well, we want it like this. And we said, how much is your system running at the minute? They went 85%. We said, you're running at 85%. You want 100%. But if you want 100%, you've got to add a couple more zeros to the quote we've given you. Are you prepared to do that? Oh, we don't want that. So, but we're the experts in what we do. So we know what it is, what else in the industry and what works. And then you've got somebody who says, no, well, we want it like this, and this is how it should be. And it's coming to an agreement. And if there's quite a few of you in the room, there'll be other people that go, actually, the suppliers are right. But when you're working as a one-to-one and you're working with a prospect or a client and they say, no, this is what it should be like, it's an ego thing because they don't want to be wrong or be seen to be wrong.
Yeah.
And then you have to decide if it's like just if it's a one-to-one. I mean, I worked with the company. So we had one person saying the opposite to what we were saying. However, we had the support of the other team going, actually, you know, boss, what you're saying isn't quite right. But when you've got a one-to-one, you've got to decide. So you've got to decide, is this client right for me? Because if he's doing that now, is the relationship, even if I sat, and it might be a healthy sum of money, but is that, in the grand scheme of things, worth it? I'll tell you a quick story as well. I've had to no bid a significant deal because I knew if we'd won that client, they would be a problem client for not just me, but I've got to think about my team. You know, my team's going to deliver it. I mean, we've got the support team, we've got the product team, and I can't have one client consume all the resources when we've got a whole over 100 other clients we've got to look after. Sometimes you've got to make a judgment call. We no bid that because it just wasn't fit for the business. And that means you're able to then focus on those that are fit for the business. And on especially on a one-to-one, you have to judge, because if they keep saying, no, this is how it should be, you're going to get that throughout the whole life cycle of your relationship with them. So it's a decision you then have to take. What is it? Do I want this relationship? How will this relationship work if I work with them? And is this a 6-month, 12-month, 3-year relationship? Mm-hmm. And if this client or prospect is acting in this way now, what is it going to be like moving forward and in the future working in that way? And are you, is that what you want for your business? And these are the questions you have to ask.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. I have some examples of that as well. Yeah. And some of them I did not work with, and some of them I took still have, and not very happy that I have them, but this is sometimes the decisions you make. Anyway, you shared a lot about sales, which is great, but I have a question in here to ask. You said that you started your own training company a year and a half ago, right?
Just over a year ago.
And you mentioned that obviously if you wouldn't do it, maybe you would never do it. But this is a very interesting point, because obviously, how did you make this transition? Because obviously there is so many people, they are working in their jobs, whatever they do, they not necessarily enjoy it anymore. They would like to start something on their own, maybe in that same field if they have expertise, if they like it, but they don't make that transition. So how did you make the transition? And can you give us some tips how somebody else can make the transition as well? What helped you maybe?
Certainly. I'd say plan. Mm-hmm. Plan in terms of your exit strategy. But the biggest planning, there's two key points from the planning side that are fundamental. Number one, financially. Don't put yourself in a position that you're going to be financially stuck. If you say, I've jacked my job in, I'm going to do this. Have a financial plan. And by that, I mean, manage your money. Can't stress it enough, because the amount of people I speak to who are in debt and in more debt and debt. And once I start speaking to them, they have got no control over how they spend their money, even to the smallest things, like when they're going out for a meal, they just go out. They don't think about, okay, maybe I should not go out so many times and I'll save a couple of £100 this month. Maybe I should save that money to help me towards what my expenses look like. So financially planning before you decide to exit, make sure you're not in a position that you can't manage your minimum expenses, your household expenses, your cost of living. Look at your cost of living. Are you living above your means? Some people say, oh, well, I don't care, I'll just spend all my money. If that works for you, spend all your money. But if you want to plan and then have a strategy to exit and do something that you want to do, you've got to think about that financial part. Secondly, your mindset. You have to be ready in the mind to say, I'm going to do this and I can do this. But you've got to work on your mindset and yourself on what it is you want to do. Don't just turn and say, well, I'm going to leave and then that's it. I've got no plan. Think about it. Take that time in saying, what's my exit strategy going to be at work? How long do I want to work for? How much do I need to save to exit? What's my buffer? And then what is it that I want to do? And then sit down and make a conscious decision. Don't just go, oh, yes, I'll go and jack my job in and resign tomorrow and then go, oh, what now? Think about it. You don't have to do a massive amount of planning, but certainly put some thought into it. If I was to leave, what is it I want to do? And where do I go? And what resources would I need in order to support me? But the mindset, you have to be ready there, because if you're not ready in your mind, you're going to be struggling and then you're going to be on a back foot and then you're going to be in fear. you're going to be working on the you'll be working in a fear mode constantly, and you don't want to do that. You want to be enjoying and making, being sure that that's the decision you made. So financially, do some financial planning to secure yourself, and secondly, your mindset.
Okay, thank you very much for sharing, because that will be really good advice for me when I started, because I've done exactly that. Just quit my job and lost my money, my income, and didn't have anything. So, but I made it happen because I had a strong mindset. I know that as many people, they try it this way, but because they don't work on themselves, they don't make it, and they have to go back to work and actually with some more debt than it was before. But I have a question. If someone, you mentioned, you said plan financially, but let's imagine that someone doesn't know how to plan financially. He was grew up in a family where financial planning wasn't a thing, and doesn't know anything about money, because in a school, the teachers, they teach you how to make money, but nobody teaches you what to do with money afterwards. So do you have any, if somebody wants to get to a little bit know more about it, like, is there any books you would recommend or people to speak to?
I'm going to give a simple tip. Because a few years ago, I didn't really do much of this because I didn't. However, and Vincent, I think you and I might have been on some of the same courses. What I do now is I get a spreadsheet, and in the spreadsheet, I put down what my expenses are, and I break down the expenses. Now, when I say that, what are my bills? What's my gas bill? What's my electric bill? What's my phone bill? What's my eating out bill? When I done this exercise, when I looked at how much I spent eating out, I soon stopped. It was a lot. It was a shock. Eating out, your petrol, your clothes. If you've got kids' school, in
get terms rid of them.
Yeah, in terms of their, if you got them in nursery, if you got after school clubs, or if they are in any other club, doesn't matter, or even if they're not in a club, have a line item in there, children, and put it all down. If you got pets, how much is that pet costing you? I'm not saying get rid of them, but just know how much it's costing you. Then on the left-hand column, put down all your expenses. And then every month, if get your bank statements together, every month, just look at where you put it in. I've spent X amount on petrol. I've spent X amount on food for the month. I've spent X amount on eating out. I've spent X amount, even a holiday. If you've taken a holiday, put it down. How much did that holiday cost you? Because what you then do, you do it. I do it by month. Some people can do it by week. Just depends how disciplined they are. I'm not as disciplined as doing it weekly. Too much paper. But once you get into the habit of saying, well, we spend this much on expenses, you can then see how much it's costing you annually. That's your expenses annually.
Yeah.
And then you're able to say, well, if I need to leave work, I need to make sure I've got this much money so I can still pay for the mortgage. I can still pay for my car. I can still pay for the insurance. I can still pay for any luxuries. But if you don't know, if you just spend money here and there, then you don't know what you're spending where. And the other thing it highlights is when you start to look at how much you spend eating out, or whether it's going out, or whether it's on a holiday, once you start looking at it and you go, that's quite a lot. Should we look at changing the way we do things in this section? If you're spending a lot on a holiday, you can have a look and go, well, should we just change it and do it slightly different rather than going for an all-inclusive, let's go self-catering. Little things, and you have to play about with this, but you need to know where you're starting from. So, and I had to learn this myself because no school taught me this. No mentor taught me this because I didn't have many mentors when I was young. I didn't even know how to do any of this at all. And it's only the past few years I started to really do it in detail. So anybody thinking about how to do that basic, what am I spending, what am I earning analysis, and just breaking it down, just write it on a spreadsheet. Nothing fancy. You don't need absolutely anything fancy at all. On a spreadsheet, where am I spending my money? And every month, just put in the figures. Get your bank statements together and say, this is what I'm doing. And make it a habit of doing it every month. And you'll find, you'll go, oh, actually, do you know, we spent quite a lot on clothes this month. We really need to not go out shopping and spending on clothes. We don't need it. Then the other aspect that brings out is, actually, if we took out some of the stuff we don't need, like subscriptions that are no longer used, whether it's gym or whether it's Netflix or whatever it is, the excess cash that you're just wasting, put it into a savings account and watch your savings account grow and use that savings account to help you. Because once you've got that, you've got choices. You've got a choice. Do I leave work? You've got a choice. Do I move abroad? You've got a choice on whatever you want to do with that money. But if you don't manage that, then your choices are very limited.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for sharing. And when it comes to mindset, what can people do with that?
With mindset, if I listen to Joe Dispenza, Bruce Lipton, if you ever get a chance to listen to the YouTube, it is fascinating. And what they talk about is how strong our mind is and the way we think and the way we feel and how the both interact with each other. Our thoughts lead to our feelings. What we watch, if we watch a lot of negative stuff, we're going to start to think negative. If we're around negative people, we're going to start to feel negative. So from a mindset perspective, listen to some of these motivational YouTube videos, podcasts. There's some amazing speakers. Les Brown, he's had a phenomenal career upbringing, but it's all come from somewhere. And it's his mindset that has pushed him through some of these hard times. And we're all going to have these ups and downs. Everybody has it. And if somebody says, oh, no, I'm fine, yeah, they're not going to tell you that they're feeling like crap. They're just not, because sometimes ego kicks in for people because they don't want to look too bad. But mindset, what you feed in there is how you're going to feel. And then how you feel is what you're going to act upon. So if you feel really run down and lethargic, then you're going to want, your actions are, you're not going to move as fast. But if you've got the energy in you, your brain's, you're working on your brain, you're working on this part here that will then relate to how you're going to feel.
Amazing.
And you do it. People sometimes will do it once and go, oh, that didn't work. Yeah, but if you want to learn how to ride a bike, you're not going to do it once and go, that didn't work. You have to do it continually. And mindset, it helps you on a daily basis. So we don't say just sit and meditate. Mindset is also go to a place, whether it's a park, whether it's if you're near the seaside, what works for you, because what works for you does not work for the next person. And go to the nature, go to the park, go to the gym. And if you don't like the gym, find something that works for you. Because when you're out of your daily, whether it's your office, whether it's your home office, wherever that might be, once you need to get yourself out of that environment into a different environment that helps you rejuvenate back again. Because when you're out in the nature, you're able to go in the nature, whether it's the woods or whatever it might be, or if you're by the seaside, you prefer that, or whether you want to go bike ride, it doesn't matter, whatever it might be. But I'd say your mindset, that helps all towards it.
Yeah, absolutely, you are right.
Pick something that works for you.
Yeah. It has to be something like what people enjoy. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just after when we are done, actually, I have a privilege. I live on the countryside, so I'm actually going for a walk around the woods, woodland, because I'll be traveling in the car for a while, but I want to get the energy going because I'll be doing something in the evening. But yeah, it's just the thing to do, like something to clear my mind. And also in the same time, I can listen some of the names what you mentioned, like Les Brown, like something on the YouTube, and just like get the energy going, get the mindset set for the day. So thank you very much for sharing that as well. And last thing, what I would like to ask you, because we are speaking quite well now. So because obviously we know each other from a speaking world, and in here we were talking about sales. You have a training company, you are speaking about sales. But when I remember 2 months ago when we've been on one event, we both actually were speaking there, and you didn't speak about selling, right? You were speaking about dream it, achieve it, and one more thing was there, which I forgot. But so where this kind of speaking and this kind of topic fits into all of that?
So, yeah, dream it, believe it, achieve it.
Believe it.
Is what I spoke about. And you're right. It was nothing to do with about my career. That topic has come about as a way for me to give back. Give back to those that don't have the opportunities. And that was all about my upbringing, because I'm not from a privileged background. We've had to work for whatever it is that we're building, and we continually do work for it. And that topic come about to provide others access to professionals, whether it's selling, because that's what I do. It gives them access to people, access to opportunities, but mainly it's opening up that mindset to say you can do whatever you want to do, but you've got to be open to it, and you've got to believe that you can do it. Because as soon as you say I can't do that, you're right. As soon as you say I can do that, you're going to start to put plans in place to say yes, I can do it. So let me work out what it is I need to do that. And because Shay is also part of the professional speaking, and he's doing an amazing job, and his cause is to reach out to as many people as possible to give them the opportunity. And that's where it fits in line with my values as well. It's opening up opportunities for others, allowing them to see whatever it is that they want to do. They need to write it down, and then they need to put plans in place to then be able to get there. Because we all sometimes sit there and go, oh, we can do this, we can do that. But then we'll sit there, what do you call them? Armchair dreamers. We sit in an armchair, we dream, and then we don't do nothing about it. There's a lot of people that do that. But then there's those that go, I really want to do whatever it is that I want to do, and I just don't know how to do it. And often it's access to people, access to those that have gone through a journey, access to just speaking to somebody. And sometimes just speaking to somebody lifts other people up, because the environment that they're in might not be an environment that allows them the opportunities that they could have. And so that's the reason I done that talk, and I'm doing this similar talk on Saturday as well.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you very much for sharing all of that. I really enjoyed the interview today. And also one more thing, do you still take clients for your training and regarding selling? So we can include something in the description for people if they can contact you.
Yes, I do. So I do training, mentoring, coaching for sales, helping technology, software and services companies that sell business to business. And I'll send you some details over, but they can contact me on info@thinkgrowsales.com.
Okay, amazing. So we'll leave all the links in the description if somebody would like to reach out to you and learn more about selling, so you can help them to, because sales is the blood of the business, right? If you don't sell, you are out of the business. So it's very important. So, I mean, everybody have to learn that skill. And if they don't want to learn, you can teach them, which is great. And I really enjoyed it. It was very good because I met you a few times, I think twice so far, but it was like, it's good when you have a longer time to speak, because I can really get to know you even more and about what you do. And now it's even opened my, you know, eyes of different things. If somebody needs something with selling and it's that kind of business, I can just send them to you, because now I know exactly what you do. So thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you very much, Vincent. Pleasure.